At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the peanut butter to my jelly over here with a large bottle of smart water, which isn't working, is Big Fizzy.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. Well, Cam, the smart water, you have to drink more. It hasn't made me smart yet, but I keep on trying.
You can't give up.
Do you remember how a couple years ago I went through the fizzy water phase?
Yes.
AKA Big Fizzy and well, Little Fizzy.
You say you went through it. You're still going through it. I mean, it's still in your home. I've been there.
Yeah, yeah. No, they've come out. Well, apparently I was ahead of the curve because now there's all of these like liquors now that these like seltzer
oh,
that
the
have
hard
alcohol
seltzer
in them. Yep. So, like, you know, I might have inspired a whole new genre.
You're a big fan of
any of those though. Now I've tried a couple.
You love White Claw, you liar.
No laws when you're on the claws, baby. Yeah, no, I'm not a big fan, but I've been trying a bunch of different fizzy waters, of course, but I've been on just regular water. I can't believe how many new just regular drinking water there is out there. I tried one the other day. It was like Waikakia or something. It's like volcanic water from Hawaii.
You know what's pretty good? It's called tap water.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I tried one. What was it called? Icelandia. So I was drinking from the glacier of Iceland.
Like Bobby Boucher, you have that special glacier water.
I think I'm attracted by how cool the bottles are because one of them, literally the top of the bottle looks jagged like a mountain peak. When you drink it and you like paid $5 for it and you're like, this tastes just like Ozark.
Oh, just talk water.
I don't like the Great Value brand water or like Nestle. It tastes plasticky to me.
I don't like anything that like Nestle does. I think they're evil and I don't like it.
Aren't they like a Swiss company?
Probably.
I
don't know.
But I tried one that came in a can.
I heard you took it in the can.
It looks like a tall boy, but it's called Liquid Death,
I've
water.
I've seen that.
It's pretty
How
good.
Is it?
It's very good, and they have a fizzy water. It's the one that comes in the black can.
Oh, word.
It's hard to find. But
Liquid Death.
They don't want to make stuff out of plastic.
I get
so
that.
So they're trying to clean up the ocean and stuff.
Plastic is awesome and terrible all at the same time, so I get it.
I was just watching a documentary a couple days ago, and they were literally talking about it's one of the best and one of the worst inventions mankind's ever produced because of how much of it is just floating around.
Well, they say it's now having an issue on like reproductive systems of human beings.
Yeah.
All kinds of things, man.
Right.
That's crazy.
It's in all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's like little parts, you know, you're talking that something at a microscopic level that's in all of us. And they think that that's what's causing.
It's in more of us in some than in others.
Well, of course.
Like you have your body parts replaced.
I used to chew like straws and just swallow pieces of plastic as a kid. I mean, right. I know I got that stuff in me.
Well, I always laugh about all I shouldn't. We had a ventilation system somewhat when I was up working at the archery shop, cutting arrows all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Dozens upon dozens of aluminum arrows. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that stuff's going to lead to like dementia and all that, the dust. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
I'm sure you were wearing like OSHA approved ventilators and stuff while cutting those,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know I was. Just like I wear like hearing protection and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm stupid. So for those of you that have been asking where we were, I'll let you in on it. We weren't going to talk about it. Now I'm going to talk
about
it. Okay,
fill us up. Fill us in.
Okay, so here's what happened.
I almost said fill us up for some reason.
Because you're looking at the water. So that and the gas shortage, where you've got like grocery bags full of gasoline in your car. Folks, I have an older home. I bought that older home simply so I could update it and remodel. All of you know that I've been remodeling as time goes. Well, my hand was forced into a sewer plumbing issue for remodel under my home in the crawl space. So for the
what
last
do you mean you were forced?
Well, it's because I couldn't get to the stop up. There was a stop up in between a transition under part of the house that you can't get anything to. It's the way it was. It's just one of those deals. Trust me, I tried for 2 days.
Was this home built in like the 60s?
Yes.
That's what it looks like.
All yeah. Right. Yeah. It was built in the 60s and then it was added on to in the 80s. And then, of course, like I said, I've been redoing the whole thing. And I've lived here almost 22 years now and redone, you know, rooms at a time. Go through and redo things, redo all of that. Well, now, and like I told before, I've been remodeling the bathrooms. And I didn't really want to have to redo all of the water and the sewer just yet, right? It was fine. Everything was good. This forced my hand. And I shouldn't have to redo the sewer, but the only way to fix the sewer problem, I had to redo the water lines to get to the problem where I would have room to redo the sewer line trouble. So what would normally take you in an exposed area, maybe as much as a day or so, has taken about a week to get done. And then I have to dig, hand dig, of course, through all this outside the home to tie it into the original line as it's already been replaced. So I have been working in and around the mud and the sewer and crawling. And also we've been getting a lot of rain. So I have been trying to do all this dodging the rain. So that's where we have been to get everything back online. It's not 100% buttoned up, but it almost is finished.
You should have recorded and filmed all that and put it on YouTube. You're like, I can't see too good. Is that Bob Vila over there? This old house? I mean, people might be interested. You could drop a little extraterrestrial sighting on people and then go right back to how to install a sewer.
Yeah, right.
I mean, no one's ever combined those two.
Might be something good.
You might be.
Or there might be a reason that they've not been combined.
This is out this week on how to install cabinets.
Yeah.
Dogman sightings. Yeah. Before you use your router, I just want to remind you that Kate up in Arkansas saw a large 8-foot-tall walking canine.
Yeah. So that's.
But you never know. That might be one of the biggest YouTube channels ever.
It might
be. You're able to combine the
both. Home improvement and paranormal.
We should
paranormal improvement.
We should start a new channel where, like, every week we give a cryptid sighting mixed with, like, how to something.
Yeah, there you go.
Like how to make a snow cone. And then along with that, shadow person sighting.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. Well, and before we get rolling, because I know you got something cool to play for us. We have also had a big influx of stories for unusual encounters. So we're fixed to start pumping out a lot of unusual encounter videos on YouTube. We have had a pile of them. So thank you very, very much. So if you want your story shared and you want it shared by us on YouTube, go ahead and send it on in to Expanded Perspectives, or you can go ahead and call the number and all that stuff, much like what Kyle's about to share.
Yeah, check this out. We got a listener that called in. This is Derek from Florida, and she saw an orb when she was camping as a small child. Give this a listen.
Hi, my name is Sarah Cowie. I've been listening to your show for a long time. And I've kind of debated on calling in or not. I know you guys like to tease about Florida people, but I have a story for you. Back in 2006, I had an experience with an orb, and we were at Salt Springs in Florida. It's a pretty typical spot to go camping. And I have been trying to research this spot for a long time. We were about 16 years old and hanging out, and our parents were at like the normal RV parking area, and they got us like a little area over in the primitive parking, they call it. And our parents decided to mosey on over like around 11 o'clock at night and check on us. And we were a bunch of teenagers hanging out, doing what teenagers do. And they wandered over there and were checking on us. And all of a sudden we look up into the trees and there's this giant orb, like maybe 3 feet in diameter. I don't know. I'm not good at that kind of thing. But it's just kind of floating there, and we're all mesmerized and watching it. And it was moving in a way that it was very intelligent. It was kind of going in 90 degree angles, maybe. Like it was shooting one way and then would hover, then shoot over the other way and hover for a moment, then shoot over another. And we were probably sitting there for about 3 minutes watching this orb just kind of float, and then it just shot off. And it was just the strangest thing I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of strange things in my life, but it was very interesting. And I still, to this day, like, talk to everyone that was there, and they're like, yeah, we saw that. It would just kind of hover and shoot over and up and over. And it was very interesting. I don't know. I've been looking online for ages to see if anyone has ever experienced something like this. It was a perfect sphere. It was like, I wouldn't call it opaque. It was obviously a sphere, and just kind of shot off. And I just thought that was very interesting. And I love you guys. I love your podcast. I think it's interesting. I know a lot of weird shit happens in Florida. And here's another story for you. Thank you.
Well, there you go.
That is, what would you do?
I don't know. Now, this is one of the things, like, you know, I always talk about how I'm scared of what I would see. But I think I wouldn't mind seeing an orb.
I think I'd be okay with it.
I mean, listen, I've talked about it before. I kind of think I did. When the basketball sized glowing green thing.
Yes.
I guess that's kind of an orb. I always assumed that when I saw that as a young man hunting, that it was something like a ghost or a spirit, because there was like a Native American burial ground up there. Mm-hmm. So I always assumed that's what it was, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe I in fact saw an orb. But then again, we don't know that some people, when it comes to orbs, are in the extraterrestrial camp. Like, this is their version of a DJI Mavic. This is their drone they're sending down to look around. Mm-hmm. But other people say that it's ball lightning. Other people say that it's like a paranormal spirit. Kind of like, instead of like Slimer from Ghostbusters, it's just this thing takes on the form of an orb.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different camps on what these orbs are. But, very interesting sighting. It wasn't just her. It was also some friends.
Well, what's interesting, too, about these orb sightings is we've had some to where you see basketball-sized, like perfectly round, glowing. And then you have some to where they are softball-sized, and they unite to form a larger orb to make like it almost like Voltron of orbs, right, as they join together.
Right, and that's why some people claim that it's ball lightning, like the energy is attracted to itself. That's why it's splitting or coming together.
But it also seems to work like with intelligent movement, not just total random. Like if it was ball lightning, you could understand some randomness to it. But a lot of these, it sounds like it is some form of intelligence the way it moves.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
I think if out of all the things that I would like to see, if I could have an encounter or any, I think I'm going to have to put an orb at the top of the list because it seems to be the least threatening and the most enjoyable to view.
Right. What about an orb and a face sighting at the same time?
See,
there have been tales.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Either way.
I think that'd be all right.
I appreciate them calling in and telling their story. Don't forget, if you want to do the same, the number's 888-393-2783.
So I've got something here for you, homie.
Okay.
And I think y'all are going to really enjoy this. This is, of course, some Lon. Lon knows that, you know, we have crazy senses of humor and crazy. We love crazy stories and wild headlines. And this one was no different. There's a strange family was encountered in a Mobile, Alabama sewer tunnel, folks.
Oh,
like what you're doing hanging out in a sewer tunnel as a family, I don't know.
Oh, this is interesting. I remember talking to Nick Redfern one time about these devolved humans living in the sewers beneath London.
Yes. Yep.
So I'm hoping it's like that.
So listen to this. It says, I'm sure this story is unbelievable if you weren't there, but it happened and is in fact only one of many bizarre occurrences in my life. This one is significant, though, because my friend was there as a witness to back me up. When I was in 7th grade in 1989, my mom was transferred to Mobile, Alabama. Now, my brothers and I used to skateboard, and we often skated at this concrete ditch a few blocks from my home. I estimate it was about 7 foot tall from the base of the ditch to the top at the ground level. Well, one day my friend Sam and I decided to follow the ditch into the woods to see where it led. So we skated for a while along the bottom of the ditch, just following it
as it went deeper into the woods away from the houses. And eventually, the ditch ended at a flat wall. So this sounds a lot like a giant storm drain, right?
That's what it sounds like to me. Storm.
You remember the one by where my mom used to live when we were kids? We would go see her, and we would play back there the same thing, skateboarding in it the exact same way.
And you know what's interesting is me and you were in the seventh grade in 1989.
Yeah, that is kind of strange, right?
You know, yeah, so totally relatable. Yeah.
But I was thinking of that. I'm like, Colin, I know exactly what this looks like. Says there were two tunnels. Now, they were never tunnels where we were. They just kind of ran right off into a creek. It wasn't really anything like this. But goes on to say that there were two tunnels in the wall which continued forward. They were each maybe 5 foot in diameter with yellow horizontal bars in front of them. Well, the tunnels were pitch black and both of us stood silently there, trying to decide if we were brave enough to climb the bars and continue forward into the tunnels. Well, after maybe 30 seconds, we suddenly heard a voice coming from the right tunnel. "Come inside," it said.
It's Pennywise.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what he says?
Then it says we all float down. No. And it says we were both scared and just frozen in place. Then more voices joined in. "Come inside. Come join us." Along with the sound of a shrill kind of reed instrument. We did not listen to the voices, but just stood there in place. Well, I guess these people realized that we weren't coming in, so they decided to come out. And the next part is pretty crazy. I like how this next part is crazy.
What?
As we stood there, we saw five sets of glowing eyes inside that tunnel. They were moving up and down as though walking towards us. The glow, a whitish yellow, intense. And it says, at this moment, there must have been a sudden break in my memory because the next thing I remember is five people are standing in front of us outside of the tunnel. They appeared to be a family of five, an adult male, a female, and three children. All of them were well-dressed, blonde, blue-eyed, and each one had a bicycle. I don't remember them pulling their bikes over the yellow bars, which would have been kind of difficult. The man held out a small rectangular object in his hand. I couldn't recognize it, and he said,
"It's called a debit card."
He said, "The next time you hear this," it's his mixtape. "The next time you hear this, you'll know it's us." I'm assuming this was the instrument sound that was coming from the tunnel. Then they got on their bicycles and rode away. Sounds like Jehovah's Witnesses were hanging out down there in the tunnel, right?
But like Nordic extraterrestrial ones.
On bikes in a sewer tunnel. Sam and I talked about that incident for a long while. We, of course, corroborated everything that happened with one another, and I'm pretty certain that if he was not there, then I would have discounted most of this incident as imagination. But there goes on to provide further details. It says, the very first day we moved to Mobile, my mom drove by that ditch. My brothers and I immediately looked at one another and knew we were going to skate there. When we got to the ditch later that day, we were surprised to find scattered animal parts on the floor of it. Now, these were parts of fairly large animals, like a large dog. The parts had no skin or hair and no blood whatsoever. They were just muscle and sinew and bone. Strangely, a lot of kids in that town told me that they were devil worshippers. Now, I'm not a religious person, but I do find it odd that an unusual number of people in that town seem to be fascinated with the satanic side of the occult, even at a young age. So regarding the figures in the tunnel, they looked just like blonde-haired, blue-eyed humans. Their eyes did not glow when out in the daylight. The man and the woman looked to be in their mid-30s, and the children were a boy and two girls, and their ages appeared to range from 12 years old as the oldest to maybe 6 to being the youngest. Now, they were all dressed nice, like a suburban family going to church, which was obviously weird to see in a sewer tunnel. Now, I paid particular attention to the youngest girl because I was so confused as to why these people were in the tunnel, especially with a little child that young. She had dark circles under her eyes, and I immediately thought to myself, that kid looks like she's on drugs. If you were like a personal opinion, I think these people were human occultists of some kind, and they were performing a magical ceremony in that tunnel. They were in the middle of the ceremony when we arrived, and that is my feeling on the matter.
But how, they can't be people, because why would their eyes be glowing?
Exactly. Unless it was, you know, a seventh grade imagination that was a little over the top. Their eyes really weren't glowing. They just maybe, you know, saw a reflection of something coming out there. Or something. Well, their eyes were glowing, but I don't like the break in the memory of seeing them. And then the next thing you remember is they're standing in front of you.
I understand what you're saying. And that's when you were giving the description, it reminded me of, do you remember the story of Friendship Island?
Yep.
Where there was these like blonde hair, blue eyed, Nordic looking.
Used to come into town and shop and everybody knew they were a little different.
Yeah. And they were like, people would describe them as looking human, but something was off.
Just a little different.
And they would kind of lean towards they were extraterrestrials. You know, you heard the stories of the Nordics sightings in the 60s. There was a lot of UFO encounters with Nordic beings on there. It makes you wonder, is it something like that? Also, I thought the description was going to lead to like black eyed kids, how they always just seem, come play with us, let us in. Yeah. They always just seem off and like they want you to do something with them. They were probably trying to lure those kids in for some sort of sacrifice.
Well, what would be even scarier than that is if they are Nordics and they are among us that easily. Riding bikes and just hanging out. You know what I mean? Like maybe that's the ones that we've been talking about that are in the oceans. I mean, you talk about Friendship Island. We did a whole series on that. Good Lord. 6 years ago.
I've seen several people in my life that definitely looked extraterrestrial. Like they didn't look right. I was on a subway in New York City one time. Here we go. And I saw this person, and they must have been from another planet. They just looked bizarre, like just the bone structure of their cheeks, forehead, chin. They looked like a human-alien hybrid. I'm not even joking.
That's a Kardashian.
I've seen strange-looking people, and it always makes me – I laugh to myself, kind of snicker. I'm like, maybe they are among us.
It would make more sense.
What was the dude that was supposed to be part of JFK's cabinet? What was his name? Valiant Thor or something? And he flew that Victory One was the name of his craft. And
that's what you named your car, isn't it?
That's my first car. It was named Victory One, And he parked it at the bottom of Lake Mead. Remember that crazy story? Yes.
Maybe it's not so crazy now that we know these things are going on.
Well, like I said, now that the government is admitting this UFO activity, I'm starting to believe more and more stories.
Yeah.
There was a video I saw years ago. It circulated on YouTube as this was a film taken from Area 51 or some secret base. And they had like an extraterrestrial held in a cell. And of course, it's just like all the really good videos. It's not very clear and stuff, but it looked pretty good. Maybe that's real. And that is video of an extraterrestrial.
Good chance.
I know.
Knowing what we know now.
Knowing what we know now. Yeah. That's why I'm still freaking out. So we didn't podcast last week, but I still was freaked out all last week.
that hasn't changed one bit.
Man, it hasn't.
Well, folks, let's take a quick break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to be discussing the Dark Watchers of California. And I think that's going to freak you out if you don't know anything about it, because it freaks me out, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, here we go. I guess you could say another story time with Uncle Ham. And as I alluded to before, we're going to be discussing some strange things that has to do with possibly some missing hikers, but some strange things seen while hiking or seen while in the woods, which seems to be where all the strange things take place. I need to thank a friend of the show, listener Joe Troyer. He had sent this to me, I believe it was back in March, maybe even before that. And I had heard something like it. And I'm not going to get into what I had heard like it. I'll probably do it on another show coming up. But this was very new. This was something that I didn't realize. Well, I didn't realize that it was kind of stuck in this one area. And some of you have probably heard of it. And it's the Dark Watchers of California. And this whole story, it's funny when you go back to look into things like we've always talked about. You find some that will tell you, yes, this has been around for a while. Like we've found stuff from the 1700s. Then you find some that were like, no, this is something that's only been talked about recently in recent reports, you know, in the last 70 years. There's always conflicting evidence, you know, that goes back and forth depending on who's telling the story. What I could find legitimately does, though, go all the way back to the 1700s, you know, a possible 300 years worth of information and native folklore in this area and just an all-around weird feeling in this part of California. The part I'm talking about is Big Sur. So you have to imagine going up along the coast of California. It starts around, I believe, Monterey County, goes all the way up to central San Luis Obispo County, which every time I see that, I think of the Iceman, Chuck Liddell, right? Always think of Chuck Liddell when I talk about San Luis Obispo. And this is the, I believe it's the Santa Lucia is the mountain range that's part of that area in there. If you look at photographs, it's beautiful, of course, because you're talking about mountains right on the coast. Right now, and California's unique like that. It's just fun whenever you see the mountains right on the coastline. Most of us, if you're not from that area or visited that area, most of all the beaches we go to is just that, beaches, right? Coast, beach. That's it. It's rugged, folks. It's a very rugged area, like most of these, you know, national park areas and things that you can go to. Lots of forest, lots of peaks. Could you imagine being like a Spanish explorer? You're trying to make your way to the coastline and you see that, right? You're like, woo, you just come through maybe the Rockies. I mean, whatever. And you see all this, any kind of exploration, this would have been a good boundary that you would have to work over. But the natural beauty in this place truly is unbelievable. There were a lot of photographers, writers, a lot of people have lived in the Big Sur area, but a lot of professional photographers live there simply because of the ability to capture beautiful sunsets in the mountain ranges. It's an unbelievable area, and it's got a lot of history. There's a ton of history that follows up in this whole thing. And of course, in that history, it's steeped in mystery and folklore, right? It just is. It's just how the whole thing turns out. Now, if you look at the Pfeiffer Big Sur State Park, which is a state park in Monterey County there, there's like 26 miles, I believe. It's south of Carmel, I believe. But anyway, it's like 1,000 acres is this little part of Pfeiffer Big Sur area. It's like a little over 1,000. When I say a little over 1,000, I mean like 5 or 6. So like 1,000, less than 1,010 acres. And it's centered on the Big Sur River. And it's, to give you an idea of what it is, would look like, people report it and have always nicknamed it as the mini Yosemite. That's how it looks. So to start off with these on the Dark Watchers, I need to start off with a little more history of something strange, and not just strange, but very disturbing. And that's the disappearance of a Mr. Arvin Nelson. So I know everybody, we always get into disappearances and missing people, and it's because it's so unsettling. This is no different. This is a very unsettling story that happened to Mr. Arvin Nelson. He's 51 years old. He began all of this. He was solo backpacking in the Big Sur from Big Sur Station in Los Padres National Forest is where he was going to head out. He started it at China Camp Trailhead. His whole intention was he was going to put a week's worth of hiking through the Big Sur State Park there, and he was going to focus his main trail through the Ventana Wilderness. Now, this was back in 2014, August 6th, to be exact. Now, Arvin was a big fella, y'all. And I don't mean like overweight. I'm talking like this guy, 6'3", 200 pounds, 51-year-old man in very good shape, right? Very good shape. He worked in the Big Sur area. He was actually a server, and he was also a substitute teacher. Good, down-to-earth guy. Anything that you can read and you can listen to his friends, they have given interviews, you know, all the stuff you can find about it. Not only was he a very well-liked person in general, very close with all of his friends, but even at work, like anybody that worked with him, whether at restaurants or worked with him in the school district, was like, Arvin's a great guy, all around a great dude. And another thing that they all talked about was he had a huge love for hiking, and he loved it so much that he did it so often. He was extremely experienced, made regular trips into the backcountry, and that's just what he did. Sorry, folks, the allergies, right? Whew, I'm dying. So Arvin has a buddy of his take him up to China Camp and drop him off, and he was going to hike this eastern side of the Ventana Wilderness, and he was going to work his way through there. And a part of that area was, I think, Pine Ridge Trail that they had said he had never visited before, and it's heavy forests in this area. Now, he had packed enough food and enough water to last a week. Now, I question when they say he carried enough water to last a week. Water is one of the heaviest things, of course. Food and water is one of your heaviest pack things that you're going to have. So I am assuming that when he said, they said food and water for a week, what they meant was probably the ability to treat water. And if you have the ability to treat water, it lasts a lot longer than a week. If you take care of your filtration system, if you take care of your ability to start fire, if you have a vessel upon which you can boil water, then you pretty much have an indefinite supply of water if water is available. The food wise, of course, you can ration. You can take a week's worth of food and stretch it into a month, right? Like, you can ration food for a long way. But he had enough to be on the trail he had planned from August 6th to August 14th. Now, you have to understand, too, the trail is only 23 miles long. Most good backcountry hikers can put 20 miles down routinely. Now, it will slow you down, and there are, of course, some studs that will blow that out, you know, 30, 40 miles sometime. But you can put 23 miles in a day. Now, let's just say it was very rough country. He is 51. He was in shape, you know, avid hiker. He could have actually done this hike if not wanting to take his time and just sightsee. He could have done it in 2 days as a through hike, easily 2 days. Elevation's at 5,500 feet. So Arvin knew it was easy. His friends knew it was easy. That's why nobody suspected there would be any problems. He said, look, I'm going to be at Big Sur Station on August 14th. He said, man, look, if I don't make it there, this is how you contact them. This is when I'll be there. You can tell in his preparation that he was experienced. He's telling them the date, when he's going to be there. If I'm not there, make sure you call somebody, right? That's the way. This is where you should report. And he gives an itinerary, which is very important to anyone that's going to spend time in the outdoors. So he didn't arrive on the 14th. Well, his friends did exactly what they were supposed to do. They go and they start telling all the authorities in this area. Well, SAR gets involved, search and rescue. They pick it up on August 16th, okay? And they go to the area he was last seen. And so they start working from this whole thing. And they bring in the Monterey County Sheriff's deputies. They bring in National Guard, U.S. Forest Service, the California Highway Patrol. Even some Coast Guard got involved in there. They bring in 3 helicopters and 30 searchers on the ground, walking these trails, beating the bushes, trying to find Arvin. And they do this every day. Now, everybody wants to know, well, where did they go to look, right? Did you start at the first? How do you know where he went? So this is a weird part of the story, but this is very unique. A man named Jack English lives in the woods up there. And this was on August 6th. He's lived there for 13 years in this cabin way up in the woods in Vantana Wilderness. And his son Dennis is up there with him too. Now, apparently Jack makes like bows for violins. He's like a woodworker, and I couldn't find if he was a true luthier, but he's making bows for violins, and I'm assuming he probably makes some of that. And so that's what they do up there. He goes up in there and kind of like a sabbatical and builds musical instruments, you know, handmade musical parts. And his son Dennis, of course, is up there playing and all that. Well, the story goes that Arvin was passing by this cabin, never been there before, heard music. So he goes, knocks on the door. They end up meeting. They all become big buddies, right? Hang out for a couple days. Arvin stays there. You know, it doesn't say if he stayed in the cabin or camped outside the cabin, but stayed there. On the 8th, Dennis has someone in a helicopter come pick them up. I don't know how they flew in back there, but he flies in, lands. Jack and his son Dennis have a man come pick him up. So they all load up in this helicopter and they leave. But Arvin stays. He said, hey, look, I'm going to stay until tomorrow and then I'm going to finish this 11-mile hike and I'm going to cruise on out to these Sykes Hot Springs. I plan on being out there about the 10th. Now, they talk about it, and they even, when they were talking to Jack and his son Dennis, they were like, look, he had plenty of gear. He had plenty of everything that he needed. Like, this wasn't a problem, right? So they start there, and it was because of that statement of, look, he had a lot of stuff. They keep continuing, when I say they, I mean the searchers. They look for quite some time because of how much he took and because of his experiences. They knew that if anything, he may have just been injured, couldn't finish it, right? So they keep searching and searching. When they finally call it all off, that was it. They've never found him. He's gone. They've searched this whole area. They've never found a body. They've never found a backpack. They've never found clothing. There was a lot of, you know, back and forth. Did the Drakes, did the did Jack and Dennis, did they have something to do with it, the Englishes? But they were like, no, the pilot that picked them up in the helicopter reported seeing, you know, Arvin there and everything was good and this whole deal. There's been speculation that maybe he came across an illegal grow that might have been up in there, and maybe, you know, an illegal grower killed him, buried his body, you know, hid away all of his stuff. Maybe, we don't know, right? Have no idea. The reason I bring up Drake's is because a fella named Harold Drake went missing in the Pfeiffer Big Sur State Park on July 8th of 2015. Exactly. Yeah, another one. That's right. Now, Harold was a retired school teacher. He was a math professor in high school, math teacher. And now, of course, granted, this was a 51-year-old man, and now Harold is a 76-year-old man. Okay? Now, they also talk, his friends and family all say, look, he was retired, but this is what he did. When he retired, he became a hiker. He was very, very physically fit for a 76-year-old man and very experienced. And what he did wasn't anything crazy, folks. He was at camp with some family and friends. He said, hey, look, I'm fixing to go just right down here for just a little day hike. I'm just going to walk around, go see some stuff. I'll be right back. I'm not going to be gone long. He took a gallon of water and he had a little pack with him, put some snacks and stuff in there. And he's like, look, I'll be back in the afternoon. I'm just going to go for a stroll. He never returned. So his friend that's out there with him goes, reports him missing that evening. You know, they wait till dark. They go look. They can't find him. They go back. Nothing. Again, Monterey County brings out their SAR. They bring out the urban SAR and they start crawling through this whole place. So on August 10th, all of them go through it. They bring in helicopters. They search the trails. All of California Highway Patrol brings in helicopters. They go after it, right? 5 days they're searching this area. So they're thinking he wasn't planning on going far. He couldn't have gone far. He was going to stay around here close. On air, or on ground, in the air, search and rescue, sheriff's deputies, everybody's going. They can't find him. And they've never found him. There was no sign of Harold. They've never found his body. They've never found his pack, no clothing, nothing. He's just like the world opened up and swallowed him. And that was it. Now, to give you an idea of what Harold did, Harold hiked the John Muir Trail. He also did some section hikes on the PCT. And he also finished the Tahoe Rim Trail. So he's been hiking for quite some time. I tell you all of this to bring up what we know now as the Dark Watchers, what has gone around the internet, gone around for quite some time as these Dark Watchers. Now, when I bring up Dark Watchers, we're not necessarily, although it has been discussed that it could possibly be a cryptid, right? That it's Bigfoot and this is just a misinterpretation of things, but that's not what this sounds like. When you bring up the Dark Watchers, what they describe is humanoid, of course, but very tall, 7 foot. Some even describe them as being upwards of 15 feet. And they wear all black. And they, now you'll like this, wide brim hats and flowing cloaks. Now, what's strange is some claim that they see them having sticks for hands. Others say it's not sticks. It's a walking stick or a staff. It's not really their hands. You don't see the sticking hands. It's just what they're holding. They've never, I say never, very rarely does anyone report facial features. It's usually black, almost always black, silent, and they're seen at a distance. Let's say, up on ridges, let's say that. They've seen silhouetted most of the time right at dusk. So they see them watching people at dusk. It's even reported where people have seen them at dawn. And then there's reports where people have seen them in midday. So it was always dusk or dawn. They were always looking over the valleys, looking over these big ridge lines. Again, as a watcher, like they were surveying where they lived, seeing what was anyone, if anyone was there. There have been reports of hikers seeing them and going towards them, going, we're going to find out what this is, only to look up and they're gone. Or only to get very close and they're gone. Like, these things literally vanish into thin air. Now, when I say reported for a long time, I do mean for a few hundred years. If you go back to the Chumash tribe there on the central coast of California, they have a tradition where they talk about the old ones in their language, in their tradition. And it's often referred to that these Dark Watchers are the old ones that they spoke of. They were even Spanish explorers had these names called Los Vigilantes Oscuros, and that they had seen them on these ridges. And now some odd reportings is they said that they would follow them, like as they moved, like every evening they would be on another ridge, almost like the whatever these watchers were knew that these explorers weren't from there, knew that these things knew that they were kind of intruding. So they followed along. Even soldiers, a lot of soldiers reported seeing them back in the day up along those ridges and things. And they said that they would be on cliff edges and would literally watch, just observe. And there's some crazy stuff goes on. There's even the author John Steinbeck even wrote in the book The Long Valley, and you can pull this up. This is all over the internet where there are excerpts from it where they talk about, and that book was written in 1938, where he talks about these things. And I believe there's even a short story called Flight where it discusses and talks about this thing. But in the mid-60s, there was a sighting by a school teacher that was out hiking in this area and along the Monterey Peninsula. And he goes on to claim that what he saw was a very dark figure, you know, flowing coat-like thing. He doesn't really go into the whole hat thing, but he says that he saw this, and while looking, he said it was up upon a ridge, and he could, you know, you get that feeling something's watching you, right? So that's what this guy got. He got this feeling that something's watching him, and he starts looking around. He sees this figure up there, and as he watches it, he says he kind of makes his way up where he, and it's close. It's not a long ways off. We're not talking seeing this thing, you know, a mile away. We're talking within a few hundred yards. And so he kind of eases up and he calls out to this thing. And he says as he calls out, it pretty much vanishes right in front of him. It just dissolved into the air. And, of course, he was like, was it there? Did I just see something? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. You fast forward, there was a witness back in 2011 that had this to say, that says, many, many years ago, I was with a friend driving through a dirt field here in Moreno Valley. Now, near what I believe were old abandoned barns that I had always heard were haunted when my friend's car broke down. Now, this could have been a coincidence, as this was an old beater Volkswagen, but it was dusk out, and at best, and there was really no way we were going to make it out of this field before it was pitch black. So instead of chancing getting even more lost or hurt in the dark, we decided just to sleep in the car and then set out in the morning to go get help, which is probably a really good idea. You think about it, just buckle down. If you don't know where you are, don't go stumbling around in the dark doing it, right? So says it, and of course they're saying this was a long time back before cell phones. Nobody had that. So says as they're sitting there killing time in the pitch dark, they're just hanging out inside the car. Then they'd get outside the car and then they're talking, and then they get out and they smoke, and I mean, they're just hanging out. Said they start to see what distinctly looked like black shadows, evenly distributed, but completely encircling the car. Now that starts getting disturbing, right? Now these shadows didn't move. They stayed there, motionless. Goes on to say that they were of significant size, and based on the distance, I would say at least the size of a small car, like the bug we ourselves were in. Now, whatever these were seemed hunched over, perhaps kneeling. And as time passed, they never moved. And though we walked around the car and got in and out of the car to see if what we were seeing was some sort of optical illusion, but yet we couldn't explain it or discredit what we thought we were seeing. And to this day, it still bothers me. So it goes on, and that's where the sighting stops. They don't talk about any other encounter. They don't talk about anything like that coming out the next morning, seeing anything. Instantly, you're kind of drawn to the fact of, could it have been cows? Could it have been cows thinking that they were going to be fed, right? Feed truck or just a vehicle is in this area and cows. But cows aren't going to be quiet, especially when it comes time to feeding. And they're darn sure not going to be still, right? They're not just all going to encircle you. Imagine what would be more creepier, right? A bunch of shadowy beings circling you, or a whole group of cows standing around you in a perfect circle, not making any sound, just staring you down like, you know, they're mad at you about the cheeseburger. So another one of those. Who knows? But now you jump into this. There was a woman named Elizabeth Benitez, and she lived in San Mateo, California. And she had a sighting near San Luis Obispo Reservoir back in 2013 in broad daylight.
She reports this. She goes on to say, "I remember one day my friend and I were coming back from Los Angeles. We passed the San Luis Obispo Reservoir, and as we drove on the road, I saw something at a distance down at the end of the mountain. It was a really big human figure, but it wasn't. It had a black cape, kind of like the Grim Reaper, and it was leaning over, holding on to a staff at a puddle of water, or so that's what it seemed at a distance. It was in daytime too, so I could identify it wasn't a person, but even in mid-light, he was very black and reminded me of a raven. So I told my friend that was driving to look over at those mountains, and surprisingly, she was able to see a glimpse of it. I asked her what she saw without giving her my details, and she described exactly what I had seen. And she only looked at it for about 5 seconds, but she was able to see it. Now, she almost lost control of the car, too, when she looked at it again. And I begged her to go back and let's take another look at it, but she was very tired of driving already. But I can tell you this, we didn't go back, and these dark watchers are very real." So what do y'all think about that? This is midday. You're not going to, you know, you can tell exactly what it is, and they both saw the same thing. So 2013 was a busy year, as there's another account from a fella named Brian, who claimed that he had seen something driving back to his home in Hollister, California. He says, "We were coming home to the San Juan Bautista Hollister side when we saw a very large dark figure standing at the edge of the mountains, which is extremely weird since I've never seen anyone cross over the barbed wire fence, and I travel that road daily and at all hours. We drove by it slowly, now behind the figure, noticing that it started staring off into the distant valleys and mountains, which was Fremont Peak. Now, it appeared to have a large cape with straight shoulders that were very broad. It seemed to have a hunch on its back, and at first, from a distance, I thought it was a condor. But when I got closer, it stood, and it was almost over 10 feet tall. It did not notice us driving behind it, but when we found a spot on the cliffy road to turn around and get a better look, well, it was gone. And then now, folks, you jump into 2015. There was a long-distance runner named Joey, and he's from Salamar, California. Salamar, maybe? And he had this report, right? He's like, "Hey, look, y'all aren't going to believe what I seen. I go out here, and I'm training for these races." And he's running mountains and all this. And he says that this is what he saw. Said the time of day was 2 p.m. "I was running and up in an area where no human could climb without gear, and I saw a black figure in plain daylight. I never have seen anything like it up in these mountains. It was darker than dark. I couldn't explain it. A year passed, and today again, January 24th, I saw it again in the exact same spot." So this fella sees one, a year goes by, in 2016 sees another one. So from 15 sees one, 16 sees one in the exact same spot. Now, and again, I like how they point out, it's midday, this thing's pitch black, I don't know what it is, I don't know what it could possibly even be. If you go into 2018, there's a report about someone out hiking these mountains that come across this and said that, "I was hiking up a remote trail up the 33, and I would love to pronounce this, folks. Y'all are going to have to bear with me. I have no idea. O-J-A-I? Oh, I have no idea. What is, OJA? What is this? They're in California. What is it with you people and these names? "I was about an hour up the mountain. There was no people and no cars in sight. And as I was hiking, again, this is what he says, I had this eerie feeling I was being watched." Man, what is it about that, right? You get that feeling, guess what? You are. "I looked up at the top of the mountain, and it was a black figure. I waved jokingly, not really thinking the object was a person. It waved back, thinking I was maybe tripping or that it was a tree waving in the wind. I took a puff off my cigarette, only to see the figure blow out a plume of smoke as well." Hold on now, bro. You're supposed to be, oh, this isn't the runner. Yeah, wait, right? This isn't the runner. So I'm like, what are you doing up in the mountain smoking, right? Imagine seeing that.
Imagine you've waved, this thing's waved back. You can't explain what it is. You take a drag off your stogie and this thing blows the smoke out. Said, I started seeing it flowing. And I say flowing, almost floating vertically. So I ran like hell back to my car, spraining my knee in the process, and tore out of there. Now, like I said before, there are a lot of folks that believe that these could be cryptids, like a Bigfoot, right? We're talking Sasquatch in that area. I don't know why the Sasquatch would be wearing a coat or a cloak. That's pretty awesome, right? That a Sasquatch would have on a jacket. But I don't really know. Now, there are some scientists that have gotten involved in this, and they simply believe that it's pareidolia. Pareidolia. So just an optical illusion. So there's apparently a thing in the Harz Mountains called Brocken Peak, and they call it the Brocken Specter. And that's where the locals say that they see these shadowy silhouettes. And what they believe it is, and they say that it's the shadows, is that it casts on these mist in the sun behind you. It throws these shadows. We've all seen it. Like if you go somewhere where it looks like, oh, look out there, like you're standing, it's misting at, I don't know, Six Flags, right? Or anywhere. And the way the light's setting just right, you can see your shadow in that mist. The problem with this explanation is it doesn't explain the distance. It doesn't explain the fact that it's midday. At 2 a.m., I'm sorry, 2 p.m., you're probably not going to be casting a monstrous shadow. This also usually only happens when the sun is at your back. These people aren't reporting that. They're not reporting mist that they're seeing. I know it's big in the Harz Mountains because apparently because of the fog forms at low altitudes, and so it makes it, there's a lot more mist in these mountainous areas, and so the way the sun would look, it would look as though it was projecting you into the clouds or seeing something like that. That's cute and all, right? This explanation is cute and all, and yes, it could happen. But you would also have to be extremely willing to believe that. You would have to really, and I'm not saying that there's not confirmation bias. I'm not saying that there's not people out there that look for certain things so they can say they had an experience, right? If you're looking for Bigfoot to make sounds, any sound you hear might lend you to believe it was Bigfoot. I get that. But these descriptions of this Brocken Spectrum is like, you remember the gray men of Ben McDue? We've talked about that up in the mountains where they had seen something in those hills. I don't really know that that's what we're getting. This tends to feel as if this is something there and that's its job. There's no interaction, right? There's absolutely no interaction. You're talking about things that stand motionless, things that can vanish in thin air. At the distance, you're not going to see your shadow in the mist blow out smoke. I don't give a damn how much sun's at your back and how much mist is in the air. A shadow's not going to puff out smoke when you just took a drag of a cigarette. It's not going to happen. So there is definitely something to these dark watchers. And then, of course, there are tons of endless stories of the watchers in the woods where we have heard this, and that lends it more towards Sasquatch. And then you start hearing the stories of the Hat Man. Well, why do these things have hats? What is it about these dark creatures with the hats, the coats, standing up in the mountains? They seem to be huge, 7 to 12 foot, some 15 foot cases, something of these giant proportioned apparitions, if you will, that just literally stand and watch. If you're not going to help, what are you watching for? Did something get too close? Did these two missing men, among others, there are dozens of people that have gone missing up in there, but are these two missing hikers, did they get too close to the dark watchers? Did they come across foul play? Did they simply fall in a hole? Did something get them? Did an animal attack? The number of mountain lions that are up in California now are ridiculous, right? Did a mountain lion kill one of these people, and or both? Where did, you know, how did this go? How was their attack not found? Who knows? There's definitely something strange about this. And don't forget, like, I mean, you're talking about still areas that have possibly had disappearances that have possibly been related to drug use or drug, you know, grows. So, yeah, I mean, again, we can attribute it to anything that we like to attribute it to, but it is very odd that people have seen these for several hundred years now. There are these tales of people of all walks of life seeing them.
No one seems to be able to explain it. No one seems to go, oh, yeah, it was simply my shadow that fooled me. Ha ha ha, it was nothing. They don't seem to be able to recreate what they've seen. People can go out there and try to say, hey, that's where I saw it. Much like the person said, you would not be able to get up there without climbing gear. So I don't see someone going through that much work to pull a hoax for one person to hopefully tell this story and years later it'd be told on a podcast. I just don't see that happening. I believe there's something out there, something that we can't explain. I believe that the Chumash people probably knew more about it and probably still do. I believe that the natives of that area know quite a bit more about what this possibly could be. And I mean, it might have even been something that one of the shaman released or might be the shaman. And maybe that's their job. And maybe once they finish being the shaman in the tribe, that they go on, move on to the next plane of existence. And that's their job now, is to look over their native lands. There are some strange stories from Fernwood campgrounds that I'm probably going to get into later. That's kind of what I was hinting around. And I hope you enjoyed the tales of the Dark Watchers. And I appreciate Mr. Troyer for sending that in. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick Mr. Big Fizzy's brain about it and see what he thinks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back.
Yes.
So there you go. Dark Watchers. Creepiness that takes place in the Big Sur of California. First of all, a couple of missing hikers, right? Go missing out there. But the place is beautiful. I guess if you're going to, it's like all of these places, like I discussed too, and Kyle and I have talked about at length, these parks, these national and state parks and all of this stuff, they're very, very beautiful places, but there also seems to be a very ominous feeling around a lot of this.
I agree.
And the Dark Watchers are no different.
Man, I've never been to Big Sur, but I've been just north of there, Monterey. Me and my wife went to Monterey a couple years ago, and it's beautiful there.
Yeah.
They have a very interesting, they had a pretty cool aquarium there. They had a really cool cannery and stuff. I'd like to go back and just spend a couple days in Monterey, but I would like to go down to Big Sur now. But man, none of these stories help me whenever I go camping.
Which is funny, because I'm going to be talking about more haunted camping and campgrounds on the Elite Show.
Really?
Yeah. Of haunted campgrounds. And there's one in Big Sur called Fernwood, which I discussed. I go into it on the Elite. And there's also a few more there in California, as well as some really disturbing stories that people have submitted of experiences while camping.
Man, I just, with all these serial killers around and everything, I mean, camping. I told you last time when we were out in Arizona or whatever, I was kind of freaking out, but it was on my own beard rubbing on the inside of my hammock.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Well,
it's creepy.
It's one of those things that we have gotten so far away from it now that you have to, I mean, it's not part of your life anymore. Certain people, it is, because that's what they do with their jobs, or that's what they do, you know, for the majority of their time. But that's probably less than 1% of the population have jobs where they have to spend that much time in the woods and in the outdoors.
And why has camping gotten so darn expensive? I mean, when I was a kid, we would go camping with my folks and stuff all the time, is because, not unbeknownst to us, my family didn't have the money for hotels and stuff, so we would go camping all the time. Now, you go to like REI, it's cheaper to stay in a hotel.
Yeah. I mean, any little thing. Yeah. It's a business now. And that's kind of like the way we've talked about with hunting or fishing and all that stuff, is what used to be a poor person's activity and recreation is now big business.
Yeah. I think many things are going that way. Same thing with disc golf. Now that's becoming more popular, and it looks like prices are increasing in that sport.
Yep.
But it's bound to happen.
It is.
I mean, that's bound to happen. Speaking of creepy, we got another listener story emailed to us. Check this out real quick before we get out of here. This comes from an anonymous rancher. It says, about 10 years ago, I experienced a couple of cattle mutilations, and I wanted to share my experience with you and some of the listeners. One day, we were out moving some of our heifers and bulls out of one pasture into another when we noticed we were missing our bulls. Now, we searched and searched, but we couldn't find them. After searching our ranch for hours, we decided that they must have gotten loose somehow, and we called it a day. Now, the next day, my dad found one of the bulls in a neighboring field dead. There were no broken fences or downed fence posts. So how did the bull get into the neighboring field, and why was it dead? This was a very healthy bull, mind you. It had no previous signs of disease. By the time my father found the dead bull, the coyotes, hawks, and eagles had already been on him, so there wasn't a whole lot left. There must have been a downed fence somewhere. So we rode fences the rest of the day looking for the spot where the bull would have crossed, but we found nothing. The fence was 100% in perfect condition. So how in the world did the bull cross? Now the next day, my father found the other missing bull, but it was in our pasture. It too was dead. This bull, mind you, was found in an area we had already searched 2 days prior to its discovery, and it wasn't there. So where was it? How did it get there? What killed it? Again, this bull, Cam, wasn't hidden. He was in the wide open, and we would have easily found him if he'd been there the day before. Also, for whatever reason, the scavengers hadn't touched the bull, not one bit, which we thought was very odd. The bull had no signs as to what it caused its death. His head and neck were just fine. His sheath, which is a protective sleeve for the penis, scrotum, and rectum were all removed. Not torn off, but precisely. Medically removed, in perfect circles around the organs. The hide was removed down to the last layer of skin, then peeled off with the organ, about a 1 foot circle for each. After seeing this, my dad called a vet out to do an autopsy, and after the vet took one look at the bull, she quickly left without even saying one word. This is when I got home from school, and I came with my dad to help out in any way that I could. Now, after the vet, my dad got a sheriff's deputy to come out and record the incident. This deputy had set the high school record for weightlifting a couple of years earlier, so he was a big guy. I rode with him out to the scene to help show him where the mutilated bull was, and at this time it was starting to get late in the day. It was now getting dark, and the deputy had every light on his car on and was walking around looking for I don't know what. He kept on shining his handheld flashlight into the trees a lot. It was a spooky setting, to say the least. He took plenty of pictures, asked us to help him roll the bull over, but we still couldn't find any cause of death. There were no tracks from people or anything around the bull other than from us. To this day, I don't know what happened. I haven't asked my dad about it since. We still use that pasture, but nothing that strange has ever happened again. Thanks, C.
Wowzers.
So, I know a long time ago, we had a gentleman on, Chris O'Brien came on, and he wrote a couple of books about cattle mutes,
mm-hmm.
Along with not Linda Gottfried, but Linda Moulton Howe.
Mm-hmm.
She, too, was one of the journalists that broke a lot of the early days of the cattle mutilation stuff. And I know that a person close to me in my family who lives north of where we are, lived next to an old rancher who also experienced cattle mutilations. So this has always been one of those perplexing things. Some people think it's extraterrestrial. Some people think it's the military doing secret tests. Maybe they're, I don't know, maybe they're releasing something into the atmosphere out on these ranches. The cattle are consuming this, absorbing this. Then they go back later. Using helicopters, somehow tranquilize the beast, lift it, take it to their lab, take the blood, cut certain organs out of it, and then place it back in the field. I don't know what's going on. Why? The funny thing is, either way, whether it's the government or aliens, why do they even bring it back?
That's always been what I've thought, is why would you return it?
That's the part
just
I don't...
Just take it just, and leave with it.
Yeah, just take it. Just abduct
it. If you can
it.
Pick it up from the air and not be witnessed, just it's now it's just vanished into thin air. What do you do? It's gone.
I don't know. That's what always makes it so interesting. And cows aren't the only animal. They're not the only livestock that's abducted. But you never hear about, like, chickens being taken.
Nah.
Guinea hens.
Nah, you don't ever hear anything about that. What's odd is them finding it where they've already looked, which that is like an ongoing theme in a lot of missing persons
I was going to say, it reminds me of a lot of the missing person cases.
Is there right there? And they were like, we were right there. Now we've walked by here for the last 2 days. And
hundreds
now it's
of people
back.
Walking arm length to arm length, yes, through a field with a SARS team. Nothing's found. 2 days later, they find a body right there in the middle. You're like,
you'd have had to step on it. Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing about them finding it, not finding anything around the fence is I've seen cattle, large cattle, big heifers, bulls, jump fences.
Yeah, it can.
Now, it depends on the height of the fence, of course, but like I've seen them clear a 5-strand barbed wire fence. Now, not a giant bull, but you've seen bulls. Like, I mean, there's fence jumpers. And usually, once they start fence jumping, you're going to have to get rid of them because you can't break them from it. Like, you're either going to have to take them to the killers and, you know, turn them into food, or you're going to
take them
have
to the killers.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to take them down to the slaughterhouse, turn them into cheeseburgers, or you're going to have to take them to the sale barn, right? Because you don't want to disclose, by the way, that's a fence jumper. So like they're going to breed your cows and he's going to jump the fence and go breed your neighbors for free. It's pretty much what's going to happen. But that still doesn't even explain anything, because it sounds like they may have had these for a while and it just all of a sudden started. Doesn't explain why they were both missing. Damn sure doesn't explain like what killed them.
No, they don't know.
It just looks like it dropped dead. And what's wild is one was predated, one wasn't.
Yeah, the one that looked like it had now the other one they found dead. Remember the coyotes and the buzzards and stuff had gotten a hold of it, so they weren't able to see these precise cuts. So
the predator, it was the predation.
But the
on
other
that
one was not, yeah. And there was no mention of seeing black helicopters or anything strange in the sky. I mean, nothing. Just out of the blue, these two bulls end up dead under bizarre circumstances, and I don't know. It doesn't say what state it took place in. The person writing in wanted to remain anonymous. But I know here in our state, I mean, when something like that happens, you know, they get the Texas Rangers involved. Mm-hmm. And the
Texas Cattle Raisers Association.
Right, Cattle Raisers Association. And that stuff's taken very serious. I mean, if you just think you're going to go out and shoot at cows, dude, you could be in for a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Like, you're much better off poaching deer than cattle.
It's... I wonder why there's not more.
So before you say that, not to cut you up, but what I'm going as is I don't think these were people out there playing a prank. Like, hey, let's me and you shoot it and we'll cut the organs off and stuff, make it look like an alien did it. Yeah. This is like a hoax.
And there's no reason.
Because there's a lot of risk. You can get more trouble for cattle rustling or shooting cows than you can shooting people.
Yeah. Yeah.
As sad as that is to say.
Man. This is a very interesting topic.
Yeah, why does it happen? If this is if it is extraterrestrial, and these things can travel millions of light years, or through wormholes, or through portals, or whatever, why does the surgery look so crude? Why do they even bring it back? Why do they feel the need to put it back in the same pasture as they took it from, and then they accidentally messed it up, like Roger the alien? Accidentally put it. He didn't know that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have on X. He doesn't know that's a neighbor owns that part of land.
Yeah.
You know what
and
I mean?
Why do they only cut on its genitals? They're always hacking genitals off of these things, and I don't understand why.
I don't either. And if it is human beings conducting experiments, I mean, we already know all the missing kids that go disappearing every year. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. We already know the terrible experiments that the government used to perform, or probably still does, on servicemen and women. I mean, taking cows? You don't think that... They feel bad about that, so they're going to bring it back? Why wouldn't they just approach the rancher and be like, hey, can we buy 10 head off you?
Why wouldn't they just have their own?
$1 zillion a budget. They don't have enough money to buy stock?
You can't have stock? Like 35 head of cattle somewhere?
Like you said, why don't they just grow their own?
You just don't have a rancher that works for you?
It doesn't make any sense.
No, and that's what makes it so. And again, why was the guy shining his light into the wood line?
The kid, he didn't know. Does he know something at the time?
They don't.
Well, he said that the vet, when he saw it, she saw it. I'm sorry, it was a female vet, veterinarian. Left. She just like took some notes and hauled out of there.
So then whatever it is trying to tear off panas and anything else off these cows. It's strange, right?
It is something.
And I would like, you know what? I would like to also look at the numbers. Is it more bulls than heifers?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to remember the name of Chris's book.
Oh, man. It's something about in the San Juan or the San Luis Valley? That's where a lot of it took place, wasn't it?
I'm trying to remember. It was like, I mean, it was literally like 8 years ago that we had him on. Oh, I'm trying to think. Hold on. I'm trying to look.
Go for it, fingers. Pull it up. Let's see what we
it
got.
It had a really catchy name, and I can't remember.
I don't remember it. You're right. It was, but it is the whole cattle mutilation angle is very odd.
There it is. Stalking the herd.
That's it. There you go.
That's it. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Stalking the herd.
And if you want to go back and hear more, you can go back and listen to that interview. I think it's still available. If not, I'll make sure it drops
classic
on
rewind.
Classic
Let's
Rewind.
Let's do the Classic Rewind to that one.
Okay.
Next. Let's release that one next. And that might be something we need to look into also for next week is more of cattle mutilation stuff.
That's a good idea. Like maybe we should do some actual, get into actual cases.
Yeah. Let's do that.
All right. Sounds good.
We're doing that stuff. Oh, okay. I guess that's it. We've wrapped that up. We've hit y'all with some crazy stuff. Told you where we've been. Anything else you want to add, Mr. Filson? Throw it in here.
No. Only thing else I want to add is if you want to share a story like that anonymous rancher did and like Derek did in the beginning of the show, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. You can follow the show on all forms of social media. Like I said, if you want to help us out, please go over to YouTube, subscribe on YouTube, even if you don't plan on listening there. We do release shows other than this show. We have shows that are only over on there that you want to check out. We're trying to grow that channel. That's basically what we're trying to do. And so it would help us out if you wanted to subscribe.
Yeah.
If you want to help us out even more, you can go and write reviews for the show, rate the show on iTunes or any other platform. Doesn't matter. That all helps us. And don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Click on the Elite tab, sign up. It's $5 a month. You'll get access to our entire catalog, which is 230-something episodes. And that money will help the show. It really does help us out.
Yep.
In fact, we got a new shotgun microphone that's supposed to be here soon.
Yep. For more videos. We're going to be doing a lot more videos this summer.
Yeah, so
you get to see our ugly mugs a lot on YouTube, covering a lot of weird stuff.
And that's exactly what your donation helps us, is to buy equipment to make the show better. So that's about it. Till next time, for you Elite members, we'll be talking to you soon about, what are you talking about?
The scary haunted campgrounds that kind of go along. It starts with, because the Big Sur and the Dark Watchers sent me down this path. So it's something else. So if you want to continue some more creepy stories, make sure to
head on over to Elite.
That's right.
All right. Stay safe, folks. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.